Welcome, one and all, to episode 388 of Signals from Mars. I'm your host, Victor. And for this episode, I welcome Ed Ferguson, longtime listener, longtime patron, longtime friend, to the show to talk about economics and music in 2024. Yeah, there's a lot of things that are going on within the actual industry when it comes to tickets, when it comes to streaming and other things. Me and Ed talk about it next.
I'm ready.
Let's do it!
I recorded this episode before the chat I had with Lips from Anvil. That gives you a further dive into the whole economics and music and hard rock and metal and everything that we talk about here on this episode. Obviously, with Lips, that's somebody who's in the middle of things. This episode is very much opinion piece and very much based on what information is sent to us or given to us via, you know, sites like Blabbermouth and Brave Words and Metal Hammer and stuff like that and others, because this is affecting bands beyond hard rock and metal or economics, especially post-pandemic. It is affecting every type of music for the most part. And not only that, but it also couples with a trend where kids are being priced out of a lot of things, I feel. And I'm not only saying this because I'm a father, I'm lucky enough that we do have streaming services and that my kids do like collecting CDs and listening to music, listening to all types of music, and going to shows and stuff. And yeah, we can afford to go to some shows and pick some stuff up, but nowhere near what we could back in the day. I mean, I don't want to sound like the old fart in the room here, but people question why, you know, you're not a music fan if you're streaming. If you're a kid and a CD costs $22, this goes back to the whole Tower Records thing, you know, that bugs me when people say, oh, poor Tower Records. Well, Tower Records and The Wall and all these other big chains always had CDs on sale for $22.99, $18.99. And then you would go to other places. You would go to a Target or a Walmart or even mom and pop shops. Maybe at a mom and pop, it was $12 and Walmart and Target was $7 or $8 with some added bonus tracks or a t-shirt or a sticker or something like that. Or Best Buy did similar as well. There isn't that anymore. There's nothing to entice kids or people to pick CDs up. My kids, as we're about to travel to the US, they're looking forward to picking up CDs while we're there, going record shopping with me. And I know that we're an anomaly when it comes to all of this. At the same time, I don't blame the kids. If this is the only way that I'm going to be able to listen to something, if it's through streaming, if it's through YouTube, I would do the same thing. We all recorded tapes from one another. And yeah, the industry got all bent out of shape. And oh, you know, that was Napster back in the day. It wasn't as bad as Napster, obviously. But get what I'm saying. There's always a way around it. And it sucks. We all have to change with the times. And we wish that bands could be making more money. But at the same time, prices for everything are jacked up and out of whack. And so I don't blame kids for doing streaming. Prices for instruments, prices for all types of things. They're just crazy. But anyway, I don't want to give too much away because I want you guys to check out the rest of this episode, which is great. It was a fun chat with Ed. Hope you guys enjoy. Send me your comments. Signals from Mars at signalsfrommars.com. All right, let's get on with it. Welcome one and all to the latest edition of Signals from Mars. We are pre-recording this episode to help fill in for some of these summer episodes so that you guys aren't left hanging. Joining me today is the one and only metalhead, Ed Ferguson. How are you, sir?
Doing good. How are you?
Doing well myself. So we've got a few topics we're going to talk about today. Mainly, we're going to start to talk about the state of hard rock and metal in 2024. We talk about this from time to time with bands and, well, economics. Bands, new followers, us old farts that are still following bands, stuff like that, being priced out for things. So first, let's talk about there was recent news where big name artists, I mean, Jennifer Lopez is a big name artist across the board. She's a pop artist. She's in movies. I mean, huger than most metal acts. She's had to cancel a tour. The Black Keys, who are a fairly well-known rock band, same thing. They've canceled an entire arena tour. I know that a lot of these bands are talking about, well, it's COVID, it's, you know, what's come after COVID, and the price has gone up, and so on and so forth. And I'm not saying that's not true, but how much does the reality of the state of some of these bands come into play? I mean, we've seen it with hard rock and metal. We've talked about this at length. You have bands like a Motley Crue and a Def Leppard, which are big bands, but they can't sell out arenas or stadiums unless Def Leppard, for example, is going out with Journey. And they've got a third band playing with them, which slips my mind right now. A lot of these bands are going out. Judas Priest is going out with Saxon and Uriah Heep. So it's not them headlining on their own. Do you think that some of these bands are kind of biting off more than they can chew, and kind of maybe them or their management are kind of lost in what the reality or the interest for these bands are, you know, in 2024?
Yeah, it kind of sounds like it. Everything seems kind of up in the air right now, and everyone's trying to figure it out. And there seems to be, you know, a lot of, you know, backlash too, like with the Jennifer Lopez case, because you have things like TikTok where people are sharing things more than ever. And, you know, just all of the hatred that people have had towards her is just, you know, easily displayed all day, every day on platforms like TikTok. And you can tell it's, you know, it's changing society's feelings about her as a whole, almost, right, to the point to where she's kind of ruined it for herself. And now people aren't buying tickets. There's, you know, everything is different right now. And a lot of people probably don't know what they're doing or what to do about it. Now, the Black Keys, they had an excuse that sounded pretty good. Do you remember reading their response to that? Or they were claiming it wasn't because of ticket sales. They said they were going to take those resources and put it towards something else. But, you know, they could be making that up to save face, too.
Right. Well,
did you hear them say that?
I did not. I mean, I'm not a close follower of theirs, but I mean, we've seen bands like Anthrax do this in the UK, for example. And I mean, a lot of it, I think, is them wanting, how do I say this? Wanting to not upset their fans. In the case of, say, an Anthrax or maybe a Judas Priest, who in the past, I've talked to Mark Striegel about this, how maybe they had oversaturated the market. And under the fact that if you're playing the same exact set list, you need something else to get people to come out. If you
play, especially for metal fans,
right, who are diehard fans that are that enjoy deep album cuts,
and exactly and
that Anthrax said, well, you know, you don't understand. We played Among the Living, and when we got to some of the deeper tracks, people weren't into them into those tracks as much. Mm-hmm. Okay, I get that, but that doesn't mean, for example, that Skeleton in the Closet is going to get the same reaction as, I don't know, playing Medusa or playing Dangerous.
That's right. Yeah, because even if it's a band that you love, if they're just playing the same stuff year after year, you don't really care to see them, you know, every 10 years maybe.
Right.
It's for me, you know, like if even with Slayer, if they're playing the same stuff all the time, I just wouldn't want to go and stand there and watch the same songs all the time.
Right.
It'd be like every, you know, 5 to 10 years, I'd be good to go see it. And that's about it.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the thing is, the tickets aren't cheap. I mean, if we're talking about, which is something else that I intended on discussing, the prices of tickets, if we're talking about this being a $35 ticket, then you say, all right, well, maybe. But if you're paying $180 per ticket, then you say, well, look at that. They've only switched out one song. And the only song that they've switched out is the one off of the new album for one off of the previous album. And you're like, okay, that's not enough to get me to see them.
That's likely not been as big of a problem for me because I don't really care to see shows in arenas anyway.
Right.
I've always much preferred the club setting. And so far, I haven't had to pay super big ticket prices, you know, at the clubs downtown. Or if you go to Cincinnati, to Bogarts or Louisville, you know, you can pay probably more like $30 to go to a show.
Okay.
When I went to see The Last in Line, I can't remember what I paid, but it wasn't so much that I remember it. It was a good price.
Right.
But you know, they're just playing at one of our clubs downtown too. Nothing too big.
Yeah. The other thing with that is, for example, is a discussion in my household, this week where I mentioned, hey, we just saw Marky Ramón in May. He's coming back in November. It's $35 to see him. We paid $35 this time. And I said, is that a price point where it makes sense to see him again? Even though it's going to be more or less the same set list, you know, was it fun enough that we want to experience that again? And the discussion was going back and forth with that. Now, we're heading over to the States, and while we're there, there are a few shows. There are some at amphitheaters, and there are some at stadiums. And for example, I priced out going to see Green Day. I'm not the hugest Green Day fan, but I figured, okay, while we're there to, you know, give my kids that experience, let's see what it costs. So I checked out the price at Citi Field in New York. And it was $180 for the last row of a 70,000 seat stadium.
Yeah, that's even what Blink 182 were charging for seats. And they're not even as big as Green Day.
As Green Day, yeah. And the thing, too, is we had an option. We could see them at Hershey Stadium, which is about 3 hours south.
Yeah.
Again, it was $135, and it's all the way in the back of that old stadium that they have there. And I'm thinking, I thought about it, and I'm like, you know, I like them. I think they would be cool to see live once, probably.
Yeah.
Does the price point make me want to go?
Yeah.
Def Leppard and
what are they doing for that extra $80 you're spending over what it's probably really worth? I mean, they're not putting on shows like Kiss, are they?
They are playing rock and roll all night now in their
Green Day.
Yeah, Green Day is.
Oh no, I don't want to hear that.
Surprisingly enough, Billy Joe Armstrong has a cover band.
Yeah.
And he covered, who did he just cover? It was a song by Rat, or it wasn't Rat, but it was somewhere along those lines. It was an 80s hard rock metal song. And he pulled the solo off. He actually did it.
Yeah.
And I was surprised. I'm like, holy shit, this wasn't what I expected.
That's cool.
I figured he'd just play like a few bar chords or whatnot. But yeah, and I've seen interviews with him talk about how he's an overall music junkie of all different types of genres. So
yeah.
Kind of cool. You know what it was? It was Van Halen. He played a Van Halen song and he played the,
well, that's cool.
It was shit. And it was, now it's coming back to me. It's slowly in my old man brain. It's coming back. It was with Michael Anthony. I think they did, Somebody Get Me a Doctor or one of these tracks where Michael Anthony did heavy backing vocals and has done live with Van Halen in the past. Mm-hmm. And Billy Joe did the solo note for note, the Van Halen. Wow. Solo. So
yeah, he's definitely a talented guy.
Yeah.
And can write some good songs.
Yeah. So
he's got what it takes. But to spend that kind of money to watch a pop punk band whose songs you hear all the time. Yeah, that's, I don't know, unless I just, if I had a grandchild that was just dying to have that experience. You know, this granddaughter that I have, I'd probably spend all the money in the world on her if she asked me to take her.
Right.
But that'd be the only reason I would.
Yeah, well, same boat I'm in, taking my son to see Limp Bizkit. But still with Limp Bizkit, there were tickets ranging from 300 something going all the way down to like 25 for lawn seats. Mm-hmm. We paid around 200 for two tickets. Because I wanted to get something that was, I could have gone cheaper, but we had an obstructed view.
Yeah, you don't want that.
I don't want that.
Especially when you come all the way over here to see it.
Yeah, exactly. So I figured, all right, this may be the only show we see. So I'll pay a little more than what I want to pay for it.
Yeah, and, makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's something you'll share with your kids too.
Right. And that's the whole thing. There are other shows that we looked at. We looked at Def Leppard and Journey, which were similar prices to Green Day. I looked at Bush, Jerry Cantrell, and Candlebox are coming around as a package deal. The same amphitheater, and the tickets are slightly less than the Limp Bizkit package. It's only three bands versus I think it's five for Limp Bizkit.
Wow. See, that's another problem I have with going to shows, especially with a lot of the bands that I like in the metalcore, hardcore, other metal bands, when they come around, there'll be three to five bands.
Right.
And I have a hard time with that. Number one, it's hard for me to sit through all of that or stand through all of that on a concrete floor.
Right.
But then, you know, you also, it's just too much changing going on. I'd rather just have a couple of bands like there always was when we were younger so that, you know, you can dig into their music a little better, but especially when they have more than three bands, then they're also busy trying to get up there and play a few songs, change their equipment and do it over again with another band. It's just, it's just not for me.
Yeah. Well, here's another thing that I wanted to discuss. Is some of these festivals where you have a lot of bands playing on a specific day. And it reminds me a lot of these memes that you see online where it says, okay, you have $25 and you can pick four bands. And at each tier, this is what each band is worth. And for some of the festivals that I've been seeing, it's almost like they spend those 25 on two bands that are worth, you know, 10, yeah. And then everything else are $1 bands. So
yeah,
I'm going to give you an example here. So this is the, this is a festival that is close to me. This is about 2 hours away. And all right, so they've got some known commodities here. Okay, so the headliner of night one is Jane's Addiction. Second band on the tier is Ty Sabal. I don't know who that is.
Third
is a Spanish band. Fourth and fifth are Bonafide and Whispering Sons. Then Brigade Loco and a bunch of local bands. The following day, it's Queens of the Stone Age with L7.
That'd be a bigger show.
Red Cross is there. There's another Spanish band that I know, but I only know of them because they're signed to Century Media. It's a female duo. And I don't know any of the other 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 bands that day.
That's a lot.
Four bands out of 22. Yeah.
I assume they're playing simultaneously in different spots, right?
Correct. They've got, they've got three different stages going on. The third night, Band of Horses is headlining. Band of Horses played a small bar.
That's an indie band, right?
What's that?
That's an indie rock band, right?
Correct.
Band of Horses.
Yeah, them. Okay, Sheryl Crow is playing that night.
Wow, the music has changed here.
Yep. Mavis Staples, who I believe is kind of like a soul throwback singer. The Warren Haynes Band. Let's see, who else do I know here? I've heard of the Detroit Cobras, but I couldn't tell you one of their songs. And there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 other bands that I have no idea who they are. So it comes back to they've got one huge band, one medium-sized band, maybe. Because, I mean, L7 was known. I mean, they were never huge. So, and that's what's driving tickets that day. Queens of the Stone Age L7. The previous night, I would say, is just Jane's Addiction. And that final night, Band of Horses and Sheryl Crow have even billing there. So,
yeah, that is, I didn't go to a lot of festivals, but when I did, I feel like, I mean, they would have, you know, a main stage with the bigger bands, of course, but the other bands that were there were still, you know, they had their audiences, their fans, they were pretty well known. And when you went to the festival, there was so many bands, good bands that you wanted to see, you can't get to see them all. Sometimes you have to choose between one or the other or run back and forth between tents. I don't remember, you know, ever going to a festival and being like that, to where there's so many bands you just haven't heard of. Now, of course, they're always, sometimes we'll have like a new band stage and people can sign up with their bands to go and play so people can hear them. But
right
now it sounds like you have a whole festival with a bunch of new band stages.
Okay, so this is the biggest metal festival in Spain. This is taking place next week. So Let me go from the smallest stage all the way up to the headlining stage. Okay, so they have 1, 2, 3, 4 stages going on. All right, let me just go by bands that I know here. So on the smallest stage, you've got Bokassa, who I've posted within Patreon, and you've got Nashville Pussy, who's recently toured Spain. The second stage has Biohazard with the original lineup, plus Comeback Kid, who I know of, and then a bunch of bands that I'm not sure of. The next to biggest stage has Sum 41 on their final tour, and that's the only band that I know there. The big stage for Wednesday is Alice Cooper, Machine Head, Bad Omens, and Kerry King.
Nice.
So that at least you know what's going on there.
Yeah.
All right. Second day. This is a 4-day festival. You have small stages, or it's called the Desert Stage. It's High on Fire, Royal Thunder, The Lizards, who's
kind of
a local stoner band. Oh, no, that's not The Lizards. That's The Wizards. I'm sorry. the Chaos Stage, you have no one that I know of. Ritual Stage has Ishan, Urn, Crypta, a death metal band whose name is like 14 letters long and I've never been able to. and then the main stage is Bring Me the Horizon, Bruce Dickinson, and Delane, and then a few other bands that I've never heard of.
I'd like to see Urn. Those videos you posted turned me on to a couple of their records. They have one or two, can't remember, but very good band.
Cool.
I hope they'll gain some more fans playing there.
Let's hope.
Mm-hmm. That's the reason they go, I'm sure.
Yeah. Desert Stage. I've never really heard of any of those bands. Chaos Stage. There's a Spanish band that I've heard of who's actually playing on that other festival that I mentioned, Death Before Dishonor, which is, I believe they're a hardcore band out of Boston. The Ritual Stage has Accept on it. That's the only thing that I really know of there. And then the main stage has The Offspring and Corey Taylor. And then the rest are national bands from here. Saturday, the last day of the festival, the Desert Stage has Empire State Bastard, which has Dave Lombardo.
Hey, yeah, that's a good band.
Green Lung, who I've recently featured on Patreon, and Chemis, who's a band that I have on vinyl and who I've featured on Patreon in the past. The Chaos Stage has Cro-Mags, Zulu, and I don't recognize any of the others. Ritual Stage has Fear Factory and Fintroll, who's a... I get bombarded with their stuff, but they're more of a pagan band, which for the most part never goes over well on Patreon.
Yeah.
And the headliners are Avenged Sevenfold, Megadeth, Electric Callboy, and Baby Metal. And actually Slaughter to Prevail is actually playing that day as well. So this is a flat out metal festival. The names are bigger. But I'm assuming that a lot of these bands, the price point to get them to play is probably not all that much. Nashville Pussy recently played the same place where I saw Marky Ramone, and they were charging $30 to see them.
Mm-hmm.
Except I can't imagine that Except is asking for a whole heck of a lot. And in the States, they're playing theaters. They're not playing, you know. If they're playing an amphitheater, they're packaged with somebody else.
Yeah.
Fear Factory at this point is that. Biohazard at this point is that. So, I mean, yeah, more bang for your buck with this. But again, it comes down to money, I think, to bring some of these bands on board. And the other thing, too, is that This is a homegrown festival that grew from nothing, basically, and is the biggest metal festival in Spain, whereas the other festival is born out of a corporation who I've gotten to see other festivals from, which aren't run well. The grounds always suck. and they're never friendly with anyone. I mean, I just don't get it. So 4-day tickets to this festival is $200. So it's $50 a day. If you buy individual tickets, it's $70 more or less, except Saturday is $80.
Right. Yeah, that's going to make more sense, going to a festival for a day.
Yeah. But so let's get back to what we're talking about with the economics, and bands maybe realizing that, I mean, a festival, I get it. If a festival, I've always said this, there's so much money to throw around with some of them that for a band like a Motley Crue, like a Twisted Sister, to say, oh, we're never playing again, I think is asinine, because a festival promoter comes along 10 years after you stop playing and says, here's $1 million to play my festival.
Yeah.
And you're playing the festival. The case for touring, though, with these bands playing theaters, playing big theaters and not selling well, or going to arenas and having to, you know, tie off areas of the arena. Do bands just not understand their worth in 2024? Because I would think that before planning a tour, and this is just out of complete ignorance that I'm throwing this out there, you have to know the expenses involved. You know, does a manager say, hey, you know, last album was 5 years ago. It sold this much, tickets sold this much. We did all penthouse hotels. It cost us this much. Okay. This album isn't selling as much. It isn't being streamed as much. So instead of the penthouse, we're going to have to look at really nice 5-star hotels.
Yeah.
We're going to have to cut back. And instead of playing stadiums with huge pockets being cordoned off, we're going to play large theaters now. Okay.
Yeah.
We're going to play a 5,000 seat theater, which we're going to fill as opposed to what they should do. Yeah. Which is what I think what some of these bands aren't doing. And again, I can have members of bands who know this better than I do say, no, you know, it's not that simple. But I've also talked to people in the past. I've talked to Tommy Victor from Prong, who told me that they tour basically based on the statistics that they receive from Spotify. And based on those statistics, they see where people are listening and where they should be playing, as opposed to just routing through Decatur, Illinois, when nobody's listening to them out there.
Yeah, that is a good idea.
So although
some bands may not come through a town like Lexington if they all did that, because we can, you know, we're starting to have more of a metal scene than we did growing up, and bands like Anvil came through, but not a lot of people show up. So you can see a lot of bands, you know, skipping over even towns like mine if they did that too much. But I can also see why they would.
Yeah, I think that a lot of the past too has been kind of shoehorning into certain places just because they were on the way.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is just me speaking out of ignorance. Maybe that's costing them more money than it is just to drive on through a town and get to someplace else where instead of just selling 50 tickets in a certain city, well, maybe they can drive an hour or two more and they can sell 200. And maybe that's the number that they want.
You're right. That's exactly probably what they sold at that Anvil show that I went to here in Lexington. It seemed like there was about 50 people there. You know, and I felt bad for them, but they all still, you know, they had a good attitude and put on a good show. And, but if they had just gone an hour further north to Cincinnati, mm-hmm. like Bogarts, or even in Northern Kentucky, they would have had at least twice the size of that crowd, probably, if not more.
Well,
but, you know, thank you for giving us a shot and coming to see us.
Here's another thing, too, and maybe their last few tours, they have played Bogarts, and maybe playing there gives them less of a cut than them playing in Lexington. So maybe
it definitely would. Yeah.
Maybe paying for or playing in front of 50 people actually gets them more money than playing in front of. I keep
tripping. That's a good point.
Playing. Maybe going to Bogarts, they have to pay more to rent that venue.
That's right.
Show up there.
Yeah. If you only get another 50 people, you might spend all that money on Bogarts.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that Gene Simmons recently discussed. Was him getting more money out of doing solo dates than when he was playing with Kiss. And he said, you know, well, I'm not taking a 60 member crew out. I'm not renting 8 semi trucks. I'm not paying, you know, hotels for this. We're not taking this gear. We're playing rented gear everywhere. We're just flying in and they're paying for our hotel and an airplane and we're making.
Sounds nice.
Yeah. So again, that's why for a lot of these bands to say, oh, well, we're never going to play again is asinine because at a festival, they can make a lot more money out of it as a result because of being able to make those kind of deals.
Yeah, sure.
Pricing kids out of shows. And we talked a little bit about this a few days ago. I don't remember if we did it during a podcast or kind of behind the scenes. When we were growing up, you could have a $20 ticket night where there were a bunch of bands that you didn't know who they were. You kind of knew the headliner. You at least heard the band's name. There was maybe a local act and then 2 to 3 other bands that were coming around touring. But it was $20. Or if not, you had $5 ticket night where it was discover a new band. And it was for $5. So when we were kids, you were able to see shows based on your allowance or based on it not making you go out of your way or paying $200 for
that's right. Yeah, I could mow 2 yards for $10 a piece. Remember, this is back in the 80s, so that's all you're going to get. $10 if you're lucky, 5 for sure, but maybe 10. You could mow 2 yards and then go see Slayer in Cincinnati on the South of Heaven tour for $18.50.
There you
and
go.
In the early 90s, when I saw bands like Agnostic Front and Obituary and some things like that, it probably was in the low 20s, you know, $21.50 or something. So, yeah, big difference.
Yeah. Yeah, and that to me has to affect, once again, the music-going audience. It has to affect kids getting involved and wanting to check out bands. It has to involve older people like us that are thinking, well, hell, in my case, I'm buying 5 tickets or I'm buying 4 tickets, excuse me. There's a big difference between paying, again, $20 for 4 tickets mm-hmm. paying $400 to $500 for four tickets.
Yeah. So, I don't see how any, you know, middle class or less kid pays for shows like that.
Right. And I think that there's a lot that's being pointed at the streaming services, for example, and they're saying, well, you know, we're not making money off of this. So we have to make up money somewhere else. Mm-hmm. I don't doubt that. But at the same time, it seems like fans are being gouged to an extent.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't have even asked for that as a Christmas gift because my parents wouldn't even spend that much money, you know, on Christmas. They wouldn't have spent, you know, over $100 for each of his kids or something.
Yeah.
It's just amazing that it costs that much for a kid to have to see some of these bands beyond an arena. I mean, thank goodness they can still go to clubs, maybe. Mm-hmm. Although a lot of clubs you may not be able to get into unless it's all ages, too.
Right.
You know, if we're talking about teenagers here. Yeah. Yeah, it's very unfortunate. And also, you know, media, you know, albums. I feel like I'm paying another $5 or $10 per album these days. You know, I've always felt like I'd never pay more than, you know, I like to pay about $25 maybe. That's including tax. Right. Now I'm probably starting to pay more like 30. And of course, if you buy, you know, something like the new Megadeth album, that's a double record, it might be $50 or more. And man, it just, that's a big chunk of money, especially for teenagers.
Right. And that's exactly what my next point was going to be. Seeing bands releasing, you know, vinyl once again, seeing bands releasing now cassettes. Again, something that we talked about a few days ago, Iron Maiden re-releasing Number of the Beast on cassette. And it being,
yeah, that was you that mentioned that. $25. Yeah.
Yeah. And thinking that I wouldn't have paid that much for a CD. Thinking Mm-mm. that I was running out and making sure that I was buying the CD first week it came out because it was going to be $9.99. Previous to that, cassette tapes and vinyls back in the day, mm-hmm. you know, $5.99, jumped to $7.99, jumped to $9.99, and then it just went into the upper stratosphere after that. I remember seeing CDs that were on sale at Tower Records for $22.99 and thinking that's not a sale. And thinking that they were complaining about, oh, well, people are now going to Walmart and Target and buying this, and thinking, yeah, I sure as shit am, because I'm going to get that CD first week it comes out for $7.99 with two bonus tracks or with a sticker or with a t-shirt. I'm not paying $22.99. So when a Tower Records went out of business with those prices, I didn't feel bad about it at all, because I thought I'm going to go with the place that's giving me something that I can afford. And there are a few record shops that I'm going to visit when I'm back in the States, but I think that they've maintained their legacy, being able to stay alive because they've been able to compete in the market and offer certain things that other places couldn't and still keep reasonable prices for new things.
Yeah. Yeah. Most of the record stores seem to be a mix of new and selling used stuff. You know, you can sell so much used vinyl now that almost helps, you know, drive the newer sales too, I think, you know, because people are coming in there to buy, like me, I go by, look at all the used records every week. And then when a new record comes out, like that Carrie King album, I'll let them know to order me a copy of that, pick that up here and there.
Right.
But yeah, I spend most of my money on the used stuff, or have been. I've almost bought everything that I need by now.
Yeah. I was big on that. With CDs, I would go from one used CD shop to another. because mm-hmm. I didn't care it was used if it still sounded.
Yeah, me neither.
And even still, I would remember there was a place close to where I lived that had a bin that had CDs for $2.99. Well, what's wrong with this? Well, it was David Lee Roth, Seedom, and Smile. Well, the CD's fine, but the jewel case is broken. Oh, well, I can replace the jewel case.
Replace that.
Yeah. Or I remember getting Down's NOLA on CD for the first time. They said, well, it's got two scratches on it. I go, does it play? Yeah, it plays fine. Okay, I don't give a shit. It's got a scratch on the bottom. I'm not looking at it. You know, so if it plays, it's what I want.
That's right. So, I think that's the way some of these record stores, like you're mentioning, that's how they get along. A lot of their sales are coming from selling used stuff.
Right.
Not just vinyl. It can be, you know, used clothing and buttons and posters and, you know, every little trinket you can think of.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. When it comes to streaming services, so I know you've got a lot of physical content. Do you mm-hmm. use any streaming service?
Yeah, I use the Apple Music.
Okay.
Which is, you know, $10.99 a month, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I started using the iTunes Match. Do you remember that?
Yes.
What that was? That would allow you to upload your collection into their cloud service mm-hmm. for $25 a month. And then that was merged in with Apple Music and went to that monthly subscription. And so that's kind of how I check out all the new stuff without having to, you know, work too hard to hear it. So, you know, and you can plug it into the car and, you know, with your iPhone, have it everywhere you go. So, and then anything that I want to, so it's like a mix. It's a combination of the iTunes Match and Apple Music. You know, you can listen to anything in their library, and then you can also upload your own CDs there. Now, I have my own home media server. I use that Plex Media
mm-hmm, right.
program. You've probably heard of that. And so I've got all my movies and CDs, you know, ripped, uncompressed to a Linux server in my closet. And then I can listen to, you know, anything I want to anywhere I go. And then I use the Apple Music to hear all the new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that keeps me, you know, that keeps me abreast of everything that's new. Lets me know what I might like to buy.
Okay, cool.
I know they're not getting much, but at least I'm paying something for it, you know?
Right. Yeah. And I, like you, if there's something that I find that I really enjoy, I go out of my way to pick it up. And that's the way that I try to support the artist.
Yeah. I did plenty of that. Yeah. We're talking about spending all that money. It's like I've got, you know, my old bands that I grown up with, like Believer here. You know, I told you I went and bought all these new versions of these. That probably cost $100. And then one of my other favorite bands, Living Sacrifice, you know, they were in the 90s and had no vinyl, but now they've got everything. So I probably spent, you know, $200 to $300 on all of that. But, you know, that'll be with me until I die.
Right.
It's with especially my old age, I start to forget the shows that I've seen. But at least I've got that album that I can keep with me forever. So that feels like a better investment, even though it's a big chunk of money.
Right. Well, my next question is, what do you think about kids sticking to streaming and not wanting physical media? Do you feel that the prices are pricing kids out of wanting to pick up physical media, and that's why they're going with streaming? Also, I mean, sure, the streaming is whatever, $10.99, $9.99, whatever it is, depending on the service.
Yeah.
It still ends up being a lot cheaper than them going out and picking up an album a week or a month, you know, based on something that.
Although that has been changing. I frequently, especially if I go to the local record store that I go to on Saturdays, or anytime on the weekends, it's very frequent now. I'll see teenagers in there.
Okay.
A lot of times coming in with their parents. And I saw a girl there last year buying, you know, Too Fast for Love and things like that that she had found in the used bin.
Right.
And I have a niece who's she's 16 now, but she's got a record player and some albums. And I bought her a album for Christmas by TV Girl. Have you heard of them before? But, you know, they a lot of the kids that I'm coming across are appreciating not only the music, but the mediums that we use and are starting to collect and just, you know, understand the value of having that.
Right.
Of course, it's, you know, streaming is always going to be the thing that most people do. And it really is unfortunate that the artist gets so little money from that. I think that I wish that could change.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I mean, we've talked ad nauseum about my kids and how they're into, for the most part, they like rock music. They like other stuff as well. But for them, they enjoy collecting CDs. And one of the things that I did this year was whenever they got a B or above, they got a CD. For getting a good grade. And there were a pile of CDs that I'd bought. I mean, I didn't spend a whole heck of a lot on them. And they were thrilled. You know, my my youngest son got 72 Seasons by Metallica this way. And it's his go-to album to listen to every night before he goes to sleep.
That's cool, man. It's all very exciting to me. I every time I see these kids, I always have to bug them and talk to them a bit to find out, you know, how is it they're interested in these same things that you and I are. And and you can see that, you can see the joy on their parents' faces too. You know, they're having those moments with their kids, you know, buying those records for them. It's neat to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, speaking from my own personal experience, it's always a thrill to go into these places and to different record shops and seeing them want to pick stuff out.
That's right.
Fun.
Yeah, it's fun. And
the last thing that I wanted to bring up on this topic, we've talked about instruments. You've got a few guitars behind you. Could you imagine as a kid being told that if you wanted to get a decent guitar that you had to pay $3,000 for a Les Paul, let's say?
No. Man, can you imagine how long on my, you know, my first job, Kentucky Fried Chicken, $3.15. At some point I got a raise, a 10-cent raise. And how many hours would I have to work to buy a $3,000 guitar?
Yeah, that's crazy.
My first guitar was an Odessa, or Odessa. I don't know how to say that properly, but it was a Les Paul copy, you know, with like a orange burst paint job.
Right.
I got it for $100 from some guy locally. But then after that, I started eyeing a JB player.
Okay.
Do you remember those guitars?
Yeah, I remember them.
Yeah, they were, all the ones I saw were white, and they're just really cool looking guitar. That was probably more like $300. And I remember saving up the money to buy that. And then I had to buy an amplifier, which I went and got a stupid, super high interest loan to buy a Crate amplifier for like $700. And I was a stupid kid, had no clue what I was doing, and I probably paid for that 3-4 times over, maybe in interest payments. But and actually, my very first amp was a tiny little Fender amp with like a small, who knows, 9-inch speaker in there that my mom got for $25.
Right.
But But yeah, I mean, and you could still buy some expensive guitars back then, but gosh, boy, they've gone way up now.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. What's the most expensive one you have there in your room?
Most expensive that I have cost me about $1,000.
Yeah. And what is it?
It's a Paul Gilbert Fireman. It's the first one that he released, which is the finish is reminiscent of your classic SG finish.
Uh-huh.
That's the most expensive. I have a few other Ibanez that I've paid $7-something for. An Ibanez bass that I paid about $7 for. The other Fireman that I bought after that, after paying import fees and everything, was about $700. That's about the most expensive. The electronic drum set I have next to me, that was about $1,300. That's probably the most expensive piece of musical equipment that I've purchased.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, it's a similar deal. I remember somebody seeing the drum set and saying, "Oh, I got to pick one of those up for my kid." I'm like, they're not cheap.
Yeah, that's right.
You get one of those for like $100 and something. I'm like, no, like this is $1,300. It sounds like a real drum set. It sounds like an acoustic drum set.
Yeah. That's something else I would much rather buy used. I don't need to pay full retail for something like that.
Right. Right. So I think to summarize this discussion, economics play a big part in, I think, keeping hard rock and metal alive, music in general alive, because we talked about Black Keys and Jennifer Lopez as well.
Do you ever think we talk about Jennifer Lopez on your show?
No, not at all. But it was the biggest example. So in the perfect,
it sure is, yeah.
And the thing there too is that you still have other big pop artists that are going out and not having problems selling tours. You know, Taylor Swift, of course, Beyonce. You have Madonna, who's playing smaller venues, not playing big stadiums like the other two that I mentioned. J-Lo just, it's just not what it used to be. And I've even seen members of, for example, I think it was Redman from Wu-Tang Clan, who said that they're having a hard time connecting with younger kids. And that's why they feel that a lot of their tickets aren't selling as well. So,
yeah.
I think money ultimately comes into that. Is if a kid can afford to buy your music, it's going to be more likely that they give it a shot. So
that's right. That's one of the big problems I think they're going to have. Is,
yeah.
I mean, how are they going to grow those audiences at those prices?
Yeah. Agreed.
That's a good way to sum that up, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So what we're going to do, I didn't think this discussion would go this long, but we've kind of done like an hour with this.
Yeah, we sure have.
Yeah. So what we're going to do is we're going to put this discussion to bed, and we may have another discussion in the future, Ed and myself. And I want to thank Ed for hopping on here and joining me and discussing this. And
I enjoyed it.
Awesome. So on that note, thank you to everyone who is watching the replay of this or listening to the audio version. Appreciate your support, and we'll see you next time right here on Signals from Mars. See you, folks.
Thank you for listening to the Signals from Mars podcast. You can subscribe to the show on all your favorite podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, and more. Go to signalsfrommars.com for more information. This concludes our show.